Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Davos for A Storm of Swords, but also, Matt, it is trailer day.
Yes, it is, man. Wow. Let me tell you, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, those who don't know what we're talking about. I mean, I assume you're on the up and up. But yeah, Knight of the Seven Kingdoms official trailer dropped today. It was like 2 minutes and what, like 30 seconds. It was a longer trailer. I was kind of impressed. Thought we'd get like some 30-second teasers.
Considering it's only 30 minutes an episode for that, it's like we just watched like 2% of the whole show.
I was actually a little shocked by how much they were showing. And I will say, Matt, like it kind of shows the timeline of like what's going to happen. And it does make me wonder. I'm just like, man, I wonder how people are going to take a show that happens exclusively around a tourney. Whereas like, you know, House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones, like that was an episode, right?
Yeah.
And it's like pretty much the whole thing. Obviously, we got to meet Dunk. We got to meet Egg. We got to figure out who Egg is. So there's a lot to go around. I did really enjoy the fact that they were highlighting a lot of the personalities we're going to see in season one. Like Lionel Baratheon got some real, real good time. Obviously, the Targaryens were there, and the armor was,
it's a 10 out of 10 for me. It's like 100 out of 10. I mean, it's amazing. I don't
the
even
tone
know.
Is great. The
it's
tone
so
is
so good. Yeah. Reading everything they've been saying, they said there's going to be no intro. There's going to be no. I mean, like it is everything that we have hoped this show would be. It is.
Yes, and big news. Two-legged dragon design on the Targaryen flags, which means that George probably did have a say in that because he was pissed about it in House of the Dragon. And I think the later seasons of Game of Thrones, right? Didn't it?
That's why they did it in House of the Dragon. Actually, Ryan Condell talked about it, and he said that later in the later seasons they did a they did a four-legged dragon. And so the only reason he kept it was because he's like, well, I want to keep it consistent.
Well, there's a line in the sand.
Right. I still think Ryan Condell gets kind of is getting some of the short end of the stick from
George. Oh, I agree with you, dude.
It's just like, dude, I think he's like in a rock and hard place. It's like, well, like George, I'm trying to
I'll tell you what, dude.
He didn't create the problem. He's trying to fix it. If you want to be mad at somebody, publicly blast Dan and Dave.
Dan and Dave, but also, I mean, on the other things, blame Zaslav. Blame the executives that cut the House of the Dragon season by two episodes in the middle of filming. I mean, it was just like, you know, I don't know what he was supposed to do. Now, obviously, there was personal stuff between him and George or whatever, but I was thinking about this, Matt, and there are so many people who hate Ryan Condell online and hate House of the Dragon because George does, that I think there's going to be a lot of people that will be even more into Dunk and Egg just to be against House of the, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're going to pit the shows against each other, which is ironic because everybody gets paid, right? HBO gets paid either way. It's kind of weird. But I could almost see people being like, yeah, I'm not watching House of the Dragon. I'm a Dunk and Egg viewer.
Well, have fun with that.
I don't
do that in Star Wars. I mean, it's like I didn't like The Acolyte because The Acolyte sucked. Like, yeah. I mean, it was just bad television. It was just not a good story. But I'm not like, oh, I'm only going to watch The Mandalorian, you know, as opposed to like I'm a Mandalorian purist or something. No, I hope it's all good, right? I mean, yeah. I liked Andor, liked Ahsoka season one, you know, it's kind of okay, but same thing. But just going off this trailer, and we're not going to do like a reaction. I was thinking about doing, you know, did you do the reaction where it's like, you used to do that back in the day, but now Warner Brothers is actually so hardcore about flagging stuff that it's not even worth, like, I'm not even gonna do like a trailer breakdown where you just go through it and like show the actual trailer, but if I just show still images, they don't care. So I don't know. So I'm gonna kind of click through it here just on my computer a little bit. Man, I mean, just initial impressions, Jimmy. What did you think of the trailer here?
I mean, like I said, I really liked the tone of it. I really enjoyed the armor. I thought there was decent variance between like some darker shots, some like almost like gray tinted shots, to some of the more brighter stuff. The humor was forefront and very in your face, which is not a bad thing because Dunkin' Egg is such a lighter tone. I do worry about the marvelization of humor in everything I watch. I absolutely hate it. Like whenever something serious about to happen and they have to like look at the camera and be like, boy, oh boy, am I in a pickle? Like, I hate that. So I hope the show doesn't rely on that kind of humor. It would be detrimental to my enjoyment. But I liked pretty much everything about it, but I'm mad. I got a little bit of a criticism,
a hot take.
Maybe, I don't know, but I'm not sure how I feel about the guy playing Dunk.
Really?
Dude, he's too good looking.
Oh, it's just, yeah.
He's a Chad, dude.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I could see that. But he goes on to become Lord Commander.
But my problem is that, like, they're like, you can tell in the trailer, you know, oh, this guy is like, basically, he's a piece of garbage. He's not a real knight. And I'm just looking at him like, dude, this guy is Adonis. Like, he's sculpted from marble.
I think he's like he was Australian. He played, yeah.
He's a unit. And I'm just I know Dunk's a unit too, but Dunk's supposed to have like kind of a long face. And I mean, it's the same thing with Brienne of Tarth, right?
Right. Yeah, you're going to glamour it up.
And Tyrion, listen, it's Hollywood. I know, but it's going to take me a little bit. Like I have a Dunk in my head.
Right.
And I don't think that's going to be overridden by the show. Maybe I'll be wrong. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll have to see. But hey, you know what? It goes with the show because Brienne of Tarth is obviously better looking in the show than she is. And
much better,
Tarth is a descendant of Dunk the Tall. So then now we see where she gets it. So it's canon, bro. It works out.
You know, it does kind of look like Gwendolyn Christie in some regard, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, just clicking through it here, man, it looks so good. I just love the tone, the atmosphere. Roman Gualdi is not the composer on this, first time.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Not a composer on something. I don't know. That's what I thought about Star Wars. I thought it could only ever be John Williams, but I forget Ludwig, whoever, the guy who's done a lot of the stuff for the Disney Plus show, including Mandalorian. It's worked. So I'm willing to.
Big shoes to fill.
That's all nice. And that doesn't mean that doesn't mean he can't work in collaboration or anything, but there's two shows going on. He's working on House of the Dragon. So
he can't be that busy.
Right. I mean, it's just the same music over and over again. No, nah, but man, looking at this, the Trial by Seven looks so cool. Just that shot of them coming out in the smoke. Arian Brightflame, his helmet with like the flames coming up. So cool. I love this. But you want to hear my hot take?
Okay.
Because now that I've seen the trailer, and now, which again, 10 out of 10, you see the stars shooting overhead, everything in it. I have no doubts that this show is not going to be pure fire. I think the little kid who plays Egg looks great, sounds
perfect. So bald.
He is so bald.
It's like distractingly bald.
Like the shot of them walking, and then, you know, Thunder's right there in the back, and they're walking. Like it's going to, the show right around, it's about a minute 15 on the trailer. I have no doubts the show is not going to be slap and be pure fire. I do not think it should be released weekly.
Okay, interesting. I'm a weekly release kind of guy.
I think that I think they should do the hybrid release. I think would be better where
like
you
release two episodes a week.
Where you release like the first two episodes and then you release the rest weekly. Or I don't know. Now that I'm seeing it, I think it's going to be so good. And maybe, like, I'm not saying the half an hour episodes are bad because I am for that. But I just think, man, we're going to watch that first episode. We're really going to want to watch the second. And I think people might fall into the binge mode where they're like, well, because the episodes are so short, I'll just wait until, like, that's how I am. Like, even Peacemaker is a show I love. But I got a little busy and now I'm like, well, I'm just going to wait until the rest of the season comes out and watch, which is tonight, by the way, while the recording. So I'm going to binge the last like 3 hours of Peacemaker like tonight.
I don't know. I'm a boomer when it comes to this stuff, dude. Like, I love that HBO sticks to their guns and are like, we're not Netflix, we're not Prime, we're HBO. We've been doing this the best for so long. This is how we do our things. And I love the Monday morning cooler talk. Like, I think that's part of the magic of what Game of Thrones was. Now, do I think that Dunk and Egg is going to be that same type of magic? Probably not. I mean, there's going to be the discourse week to week. But it's not going to be like, what's your theory about this? I don't see that happening. Maybe towards the end, possibly.
Yeah. It'll be a fantastic show streaming, and which is, you know, what you ultimately have to think about.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, I don't have a problem with the episodes being shorter because the story itself is not very long.
Yeah,
audiobook is like 2.5 hours, which is roughly the same as each episode. So it's going to be like very I mean, just listen to the audiobook and you'll know exactly what's going to happen. You can even read the graphic novel and it'll be, which is also fantastic, by the way, and you'll be set to go. So I don't know, we'll see, but yeah, I'm excited for it. I just, man, maybe two episodes, maybe they should have just dropped two to start, just really let you sink your teeth in.
Do you remember what I said would be like the make or break for the show for me?
I do not.
I said that the opening of Hedge Knight has one of the greatest opening lines of any book I've ever read. And I said, they have to nail that opening scene. And what do you know? The opening part of the trailer is dunk.
Oh, dude, it's so good.
That was honestly, for me, that was like peak. Like, I was like, oh, I have
chills. It's like peak Game of Thrones.
I think very excited.
This show just looks so gorgeous. Like the shot of him, which I think is immediately the following morning when he's going down the hill. It's like 10 seconds in. It's the second shot and the sun is coming up. The show is beautiful.
It looks beautiful. Yes.
Like throw in the Homelander meme. It's like, it was perfect. I mean, that's like exactly.
Yeah. I think also, man, like I remember when I read A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, not knowing what to expect of I didn't know anything about it. I just knew it took place 100 years before and people liked it. So I read it and I remember just being so shocked by how different it was than the main series.
It's phenomenal.
In everything, like in tone. It's like
the first thing we ever did on this podcast.
Was an
even back before when it was Second Breakfast. We're like, man, nobody ever talks about this. And so we did it. So that was the very, very first thing we ever did.
Awesome. So for me, I'm just wondering how many people are going to come to this show and just be shocked by how different it is. Because, I mean, based on the trailer, we're looking at a very different show, which we said should be the case. I'm happy about this. But I just wonder how, because most people who are going to watch the show, Matt, have never read the book.
Yeah.
Like most. So I'm just curious what they'll think. Like most of the audience has never even cracked a George R. R. Martin book. They've only watched the shows. And this is just going to be so wildly different. I'm curious to see what the reaction is. I only read one comment, Matt. I read one comment about the trailer. And you know what it said?
What?
There's a reason why I only read one. It said, this show is going to suck. The dragon looks fake AF.
Okay.
Bro, the dragon is fake is in fake. The show. It's yeah, literally.
That sounds like trolling.
It had to be rage bait. It had to be rage bait.
Yeah,
I couldn't believe it when I saw. I think they were being serious though, like the way that they were responding. I don't know, but I just was like, yeah, I can't read any more of these comments. I gotta just be pure minded when I walk into the show, dude. I am so excited for this.
Yeah, so some of the comments here. By the way, real quick, Tanzel, we got like one little shot of her.
Yeah,
looks great. I think Arian Brightflame. I think people are gonna be like, oh man, I really hate this guy. Is he Kristen Cole bad? I don't know. But he's certainly a jerk.
He might be, dude.
And you're gonna hate him. I'm very excited to watch six episodes and then wait 3 years for more. See,
the guy. See, it's just this shit.
Like he doesn't even know that. Doesn't even know, they already filmed season. Yeah, they've already. I think season two is like already. Or no, season two and three are filming back to back.
Yeah, this is obviously a show that they want to come out yearly. And I think that is the plan, by the way. I understand why people are pessimistic about television in general, but it's just so defeated. Like
Lionel Baratheon with the antlers on his helmet, though.
Oh, let's go. Sick. He needed to be fatter, though. I'm going to say it. He needed to be a little chunkier.
Agreed.
I wanted him to be big bellied. They should have just cast Mark Addy as every Baratheon in every spinoff.
They should.
And just name him something else. And just pretend that we don't know.
He's just a doppelganger. He just continuously. Who cares if it's a recast? It's the best casting there is. But Lionel Baratheon's a lot younger here because then, you know, he should. Then Barristan fights him later.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah,
Lionel Baratheon's a cool cat. Are we gonna read Hedge Knight?
Oh yeah,
like before the show comes out.
We'll have to. I mean, it depends on how much of us. We're not gonna finish the Storm of Swords before the end of the year.
No,
but we will probably just do Hedge Knight.
Yeah, before. And we'll probably just do an episode of it. Or do you?
I think we'll do two because we'll do the audiobook splits it in half.
Okay.
So we can do just like part one, part two. But yeah,
I can't wait to reread these.
Yeah, we'll definitely do it. Cause then we'll just cover it every week, and that'll be like 6 weeks, and then we'll get back.
Yeah, and I want to be like up to date on like how I read Fire and Blood as the show started to come along. I need it would be good to get a refresher. I've read Night of the Seven Kingdoms, I think, 4 times.
Oh, I've read it like
it's my comfort listen. Like I throw it on Audible
whenever I'm on a plane.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's just, yeah. I read the graphic novel. I have the physical book. I don't even own a physical copy of Game of Thrones,
but which I do messed up.
Well, I don't use
regular. I have 7 copies of Game of Thrones.
I know. I'm sure you do.
Do you want one?
No, I'm okay.
Good. I wasn't going to give it to you.
Okay.
They're mine, Matt.
That's okay.
What if I lose one?
Well, then we'll be screwed. we have this podcast to go back to and to listen to all of the episodes. But speaking of which, by the way, we are going to still move on and do our chapter today as well. And that is Davos 4 of A Storm of Swords. So with that, here we go. Davos and a few handpicked men he knows to be loyal only to Stannis begin their mission in the dark of night. They find Edric Storm in Pylos' Solar, and the Maester tells the boy to listen to Davos as he is the king's hand. Davos and his men bring Edric in secrecy to a ship of Salador Sands, and Davos tells the boy that he must go with Sir Andrew Estermont on an adventure. With the boy safely away from Dragonstone, Davos goes to face Stannis. He tells the king that Joffrey is dead, and Melisandre states that Tommen will be named king. When she asks Stannis for the boy, the king warns her that she will pay with her life if she is wrong. Melisandre is sure that Stannis is the one prophesied 5,000 years ago, that the comet was his herald. But Davos reveals that Edric Storm is gone, and judges, based on her reaction, that Melisandre has not foreseen this in her flames. Davos tells Stannis that a king must protect his people, or he is no king at all. When Stannis draws a Lightbringer to behead Davos, the Onion Knight begins to read out the letter that Maester Pylos received from the Night's Watch. This is also by the last time we were in a Davos chapter until A Dance with Dragons.
Man, that's kind of a bummer. I love Davos so much. And also, we're going to get our Here Comes the Calvary moment at the end of the book here, which is my favorite Here Comes the Calvary moment in all of fiction. I love it to death. And this book does a great job of making you kind of forget this moment because of everything else that's happening with Tyrion. And then when Stannis shows up with Jon, you're like, oh my God. Yeah.
And by the way, next chapter is a Jon chapter. So, is Stannis the one, or is it Jon Snow?
It's a good question.
There we go.
Good question, dude. Davos saying, if you can't protect your people, you're no king at all. That's a banger line.
It is. Like,
Davos laid it down. I love it.
Well, I just love here. So, you were just right here. It was right at the beginning of this. Lord of Light, defend us. The night is dark and full of terrors. Well, in the next chapter, who is it? Jon Snow, Night's Watch, which is the shield that guards the realms of men.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Sure, the night's dark and scary, but that's what the Night's Watch is there for.
And Jon Snow's leading them.
Damn straight.
Let's go.
He's really about to be come next chapter. So,
oh, he's clearly Azor Ahai, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so here we are. We're praying to R'hllor. Lord of Light, protect us, the queen saying. The king did not respond with the others. He was staring into the flames. Davos wondered what he saw in there. Another vision of the war to come or something closer to home. R'hllor, who gives us breath, we thank you, said Melisandre. R'hllor, who gives us day, we thank you. We thank you for the sun that warms us, Queen Selyse and the other worshippers replied. We thank you for the stars that watch us. We thank you for the hearths and for our torches that keep the savage dark at bay. So what do we think about that, Jimmy? Just praying to R'hllor, this god of light.
I just love the religions in A Song of Ice and Fire so much because George doesn't just like list them and say, oh, these people believe in this and these people believe in that. He actually like shows customs around the religions and they feel vastly different. Yeah. It's like probably one of the better parts of the world building in A Song of Ice and Fire. But I'm interested that R'hllor wouldn't give Melisandre the heads up. Like, hey, your king's blood's walking out.
Maybe this is maybe that's something to do with Melisandre's death. Really, this is the beginning of Melisandre's downfall, if you want to say downturn.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she does say, okay, Stannis, we got to go. But they only go because the Night's Watch calls them. Right?
That's true. Like,
why doesn't she think we need to go take out the others now? Like, and then they get there and they're just kind of like, okay, well, we're just going to hang out here at Castle Black. Like, but the plan is still, we need to take over the rest of the realm, not defeat the others.
I think Melisandre is probably looking at the Night's Watch of how they exist today and is saying that it's probably null and void. That's my guess. And that Stannis could appropriately defeat them if he was king of the seven, he was a ruler of the Seven Kingdoms. That's my guess, because she did not, I don't think she's the one that decides to go. I think that's a Stannis move, right?
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, that's how this chapter ends, is, you know, Davos is basically saved by the Night's Watch. Say, well, you have a bigger calling mm-hmm. than just being upset with me for letting Edric Storm go.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a little weird that Melisandre is so wrapped up in the politics. But I mean, being the ruler does come with a lot of manpower, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. Is she after power after all? I don't think so. I think she believes what she says. I think she's 100% a true believer of her lore.
It's just that their path is just kind of weird. It is. Right? Because it's like, okay, well, you lose to, like, you do this Shadow Baby thing and kill Renly.
Wild.
Right?
Wild.
Now Joffrey is dead. And you did want another baby. You did want to use Edric Storm and his King's Blood for, you know, something. So, I mean, that is kind of their plan. But instead of saying, all right, now is the time to take down Joffrey or take down Tommen, because they're talking about Tommen is the next king, they decide ultimately to go all the way north to the Night's Watch and shut down this. It's just an interesting, it is. I mean, it's so cool the way it ultimately works out, because it's just such, it was not expecting this at all. And even the show does such a great job where it's like John's there and you think he's like, all right, I'm going to just commit suicide here and take out Mance Rayder. And then boom, suddenly Stannis shows up.
Yeah. Also, like, I guess you could argue that Stannis, being who he is, has no other choice but to go to the Night's Watch. I mean, that's why he goes, right? Because of who he is. Yeah. So maybe Melisandre is just like, there's no talking him out of this, and probably sees it as a good thing. I imagine this is like some of the characteristics she's looking for in the person that she thinks she has.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, man, this chapter is just, it is a short chapter, by the way, but it is kind of weird. Like, just the last little bit here, right? I mean, Davos is on his knees. He's on his knees getting ready to be headed, and he's just like, hold on a second, I gotta read this. It's like, you could have brought that up before you like got down on your knees. Yeah, and all these other things. It's like, why'd you wait till the last sec? He's like fumbling inside his cloak to draw out the crinkled sheet of parchment. You know, it seems like a thin and flimsy thing, yet it was the shield he had. A king's hand should be able to read and write. Maester Pylos has been teaching me. He smoothed the letter flat upon his knee and began to read by the light of the magic sword. It's like, you could have mentioned that earlier. Hold on, before you kill me, there's something we need to read this.
Well, maybe he wanted to see if Stannis would actually go that far to say, like, this is your end.
Yeah.
Like, to get a good gauge on where Stannis is mentally. And maybe he had hoped that he wouldn't have to use it as a shield, but he knew he had the insurance policy. But yeah, it does seem a little dramatic to get all the way down to your knees and then be like...
And then wait for the last second.
Pull out the Declaration of Independence. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's on the back of the Declaration of Independence Day.
Yeah, I think Davos is, I mean, I think we all typically agree that Davos is in the right. And what this chapter ultimately is, I think more than anything, is set up. It sets up foreshadowing to what's going to happen to, mm-hmm. You know, Selyse.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Shireen, excuse me. Shireen, you know, a king's son with the power of king's blood in his veins. Melisandre's ruby glowed like a red star at her throat. Do you think you've saved this boy, Onion Knight? When the long night falls, Edric Storm shall die with the rest, wherever he is hidden. Your own sons as well. Darkness and cold will cover this earth. You meddle in matters you do not understand. There's much I don't understand, Davos admitted. I have never pretended elsewise. I know the seas and rivers and the shapes of the coast where the rocks and shoals lie. I know hidden covers where a boat can land unseen, which is also kind of a little bit of a throw at her, right? Like, oh, yeah, I'm the one who got you in there, by the way. And I know that that a king protects his people, or he is no king at all. You know, then Davos says, hey, if I've offended you, take my head. I'll die as I lived. And then he's like, okay, but say what you will, but say it quickly. The muscle in the king's neck stood out like cords.
Whew.
Yeah.
Stannis is kind of an imposing figure whenever it comes time to, you know, put the metal to the neck, I guess. He does have a presence about him. That's why I love Stannis as a character, though. He's so conflicting. I like the fact that he is like very grounded in his ideals, but it also makes him just such a bastard. Yeah. It makes him just so hateable at the same time.
I think he does like Davos.
Oh, I think he loves Davos. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the show kind of goes a little more into like the idea that he's like really going to betray and like, or not betray, but like kill Davos. And
yeah.
And they really kind of hype up their arguing more, where because here there's only so many Davos chapters. So it's actually not as powerful of a moment, just something the show expanded on and did a good job. But I think like even here, it's more like Stannis is like, you know, you can kind of see it just in the text that it's more like the idea of him, like he likes Davos, but it's like, well, if you want me to kill you, I will, you know. it's like, I mean, if that's really what you want, I will do it.
Yeah, and the way Davos reacts is very much how Stannis would most likely react, which is kind of ironic.
Yeah.
Like, that's why Davos is Stannis's man.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, what this chapter really is ultimately, it just continues down this path that Stannis is going towards, which is ultimately going to be burning Shireen. And
yeah.
How much more is he going to be willing to do? Because at the end of the day, like, he is going to... I mean, it is his kin. You are going to take blood of your kin.
Yeah. And
like, you could leech Davos, or you could leech Stannis. You don't have to kill him, but you could leech him for some king's blood.
That is true.
Like, you don't have to kill him, but you could just get a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. What's up with that? It's a good point.
Thedric Storm, it seems like they need a lot.
That boy was going to die. That boy was going to be 6 feet in the ground. Which I'm excited to see him play a bigger role in Winds of Winter and such. I think that'll be really cool.
Obviously different than the show where it was Gendry and really kind of hammed it up. An expanded change in the show. I don't know that we necessarily need Edric Storm because we don't know what happens to Edric Storm. Maybe we do need Edric Storm. But I did kind of like what they did in the show where it's like,
they made it work.
Melisandre comes in, she's going to seduce him. And then it's like, it just, you know, it made her seem a little more scary. Right.
Oh, yeah,
and it was definitely a tense scene. It also gave Gendry a little more screen time to build his character up. So definitely something that's not in the book, but I did think that was a pretty cool change.
Yeah. That's a good way of adapting things, right? They have to make cuts and changes and combine stuff. And that's just the nature of television. It happens literally every single time anything is adapted, and it's just reality.
It will be something that happens in Dunkin' Egg.
It will absolutely happen. I mean, Tom Bombadil's not in Lord of the Rings for a reason, folks. I mean, it's just...
Is he in the Hobbit movies?
No.
I don't know. I've only seen the first one.
You should watch the recut.
The second and third one, they've been on, like, I, you know, I've been like at somebody's house and they've been on, but I've never really sat down and watched it like as a big full of it.
Oh, by the way, did you see Rings of Power's buyout is like, I think it's $2 million a season or $20 million?
Is the show happening? Are they doing another one?
No, I guess that they're trying to weigh, like, if they cancel the show, they have to pay, I think, $20 million an episode. Or now a season or something, or $2 million an episode or something like that. And I'm like, you might just want to do it.
I don't know. It's probably worth it to not.
Bro, that show's ass. I've tried to watch that show inebriated. I have tried to watch Rings of Power season two.
Is it better than season one?
No, it's so not good. It, and here's the thing. I don't care about the lore changes, whatever. I mean, that sucks, whatever. The problem with that show is, dude, it looks cheap. Somehow, it's a $1 billion show. It looks cheap. It looks so bad.
I literally watched like the first episode and I was like, I don't know if I can do this.
I mean, I don't like any Amazon.
And then
for the most part.
Oh, there's some good Amazon shows.
There are some. I mean, for the most part, I like some, but there is a tint. There's like a color grade that Amazon Prime uses for their shows. I hate it. It's like a blue, like a cool blue.
They do. Yeah, they're very into that. And then like The Boys uses that, like that green tint that was everywhere in the mid 2000s.
Oh, yeah, Snake Eater. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it was in all every video game, like Years of War, all that stuff. And like a lot of the action movies and stuff, they all used it to give it that sort of like military,
grungy.
Iraq.
Yeah.
Like every Middle Eastern war movie, you know, like or American movie that like all they all use that like green tint over there.
Yeah.
Resident Evil 5, which also takes place like in Africa, you know, it's a video game. It's a video game, but it's like very notorious for using
great co-op.
That great co-op. And then if you the people have reshaded it, like, and it looks infinitely better,
bro. I'm just so thankful we have Duncan Egg coming. I'm just so thankful for that because I want to watch fantasy television. I just think 90% of it's not very good. And like House of the Dragon has its problems. I still like it a lot. And I still think it's the best show in town. Like, I don't think it's close.
Did they drop a Witcher season 4 trailer?
Who cares?
I don't know. Or maybe they gave us like a first look of Liam Hemsworth as Geralt. And that show's going to flop hard.
Is anyone watching that? Is anyone listening? I don't think anyone's excited for that.
No, it's going to be bad.
I might watch the first episode of curiosity to see what I think of Hemsworth as Geralt. But yeah, I mean, 99% chance I'm not.
Well, I stand by what I said when it originally, if he had been the guy from the beginning,
sure,
there'd be no problem.
Sure, yeah.
But you just can't replace Henry Cavill's too good.
They should have just folded the whole thing at that point.
They should have just done a buyout and they should have just been like, what do we have to do to keep you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, apparently just listen to him about not contradicting the books, but I don't know. I know it's not easy to adapt things, but there's just been so many failures at this point, you know, Wheel of Time. Even though I had good ratings in the last season, we're very lucky that not only did we have Game of Thrones for 8 seasons, despite what happened at the end, but House of the Dragon looks like it's going to make its full run, right? It's going to have its 4 seasons.
Duncan Egg looks like it's going to be freaking
fun. Duncan Egg, I think, is so cheap that they, like, why wouldn't we kind of deal? So to me, I we're just really, really lucky. I also think it does speak to the quality of HBO. Regardless of what some executives might do or showrunners or whatever. And also the stories that George wrote, they're just really good for TV.
Yeah. You know, and maybe there is a way, actually, now that I'm kind of thinking about this and we'll tie it into the chapter, like a character like Edric Storm, maybe there are characters that you could tell their story that is like a side story to a Game of Thrones. Like the Song of Ice and Fire, like characters you left out or characters that interact with some of these like smaller characters. Like, I mean, I'm not saying we need like a Salador Sand show, you know, but
we don't.
Like, you could give us like an Essos show about just like things that are going on in Essos, and you like something that would like fit within maybe the budget of a Duncan Egg. And things like that, as a way to expand the story. Because when you go back and you begin looking at some of these other things, I just don't know where you pick and choose and say like, oh, we're gonna do like here's a story about somebody that's going on during like King Jaehaerys or something,
right?
But there are a lot of characters in A Song of Ice and Fire, like the main series, like an Edric Storm, like an Edric Dane, who I don't know.
Maybe I'll give you two things.
Maybe there's a little bit of story there you could give us that could be something kind of cool that you could use to bridge some gaps somewhere, or almost like an Andor.
It already exists, bro. Tales
called. Yeah.
Make that to a show.
Yeah.
Dude, the story in the Telltale game was sick. the heart tree.
Yeah, and there's like the old grove, and there's all these guys, like, what's going on there?
They did a nice job of tying it into the timeline of Game of Thrones, but not relying on it too much. It's its own conflict between
House two Forrester houses. Is mentioned in the books.
It's real. I'm telling you, dude, if they made a TV show out of the Telltale storyline, I would be on board. I would love it.
Yeah.
And folks, if you're not like, if you don't play games or whatever, you should honestly go watch like YouTube videos of the Telltale game story. The thing about Telltale games, if you're not familiar, is that you make your own decisions. The sad part is that since it's only the first game, your decisions really don't matter that much. Like, the idea is that in the sequels it would have been, but they lost their licensing and the studio collapsed. Yeah. Now it's back, whatever. It doesn't really matter. Go watch the story.
What do you have it? Do you remember at all which choice you made? Which brother did you save?
Oh, I don't remember anything.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything. I could replay it and it'd probably feel brand new again. Well, then I should do that.
Well, then I won't say it because I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah. Don't spoil it for the listeners. They're going to go watch it on YouTube now.
I'm sure a lot of them haven't seen it.
I think people would get behind that.
You do interact with people from the thing. Like, you interact with Cersei, you interact with Jon Snow. And Tyrion. And it's actually all their voice actors. Ramsay Bolton. Jeez, Ramsay Bolton.
It's awesome, bro.
Ramsay in that game is brutal.
Yeah. brutal. I'm telling you, man, you could bring these people in for cameos, right? Like, you could have Kit Harington for three episodes or something. And I think people would be excited about it because I think that the conflict of that story is on its own really good and would make for good television. Another thing that we can consider, Matt, and you're talking about these stories we can tell, if Duncan Egg succeeds and it is shown that a lighter, almost family-friendly tone can work in the Westeros TV universe, then that opens up a lot more options about things that you can do in Westeros. Like, if we can prove that there is an appetite for something lighter, that opens up a whole other realm of stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a bunch of different shows and things. I mean, things you could do. I mean, you could do something, you know, it's almost like in Star Wars, it's like, okay, well, you've got like the Jedi, and then now like there's like the Jedi and the Sith and what's always going on with them. But then there's always been the undercurrent of like smugglers and the Imperial agents and all this stuff that they've never really been able to kind of pull off until now. Now we got the Mandalorian. Now we got Andor. Now, I mean, of course, Rogue One came up, but it was like it's so tied to Star Wars Episode IV.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh yeah, there's this whole other reason. Now we're getting a Darth Maul show in Star Wars. That's also going to be, even though he is a Sith, it takes entirely place during when he becomes the leader of like a crime syndicate. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like, so you're still exploring that like criminal underbelly and stuff. And that's a big part of it. I mean, and that's what this may introduce is like Flea Bottom and you know,
yeah,
all these different, all these different things. Do we know anything? We've kind of gone off the rails about the chapter, by the way.
Yeah, so
I know you're fine. I do want to kind of tie back into that, but real quick, the play, wasn't that supposed to happen? Is there anything on that?
Oh, from what I remember, George gave an update like a couple months back and he basically said they were writing it. I think they secured a location. I don't believe it's on Broadway in New York. I think it's going to happen in the United Kingdom. London, maybe.
But it said it was really expected to make its debut in 2023. It was delayed to late 2024, and now it is delayed to 2024. But I mean, is it?
He said that they were. I thought he said that they were starting to draft it. Like maybe only 2 months ago or so, whenever he was still updating us on his blog.
On the road again. The last time he said anything was 2024.
All right, maybe I'm way off here.
I think that's the last time he said anything about it.
Hmm. Are we expecting anything from New York Comic Con? George is going to be there. I think it's just to push the show.
I think too. So too. So I don't think there's anything going on with it. The Iron Throne is what it's called, but
supposed to be the tourney at Harrenhal.
The Iron Throne is coming. Can I buy tickets? No, not currently booking. So yeah, it's not happening
yet. Yeah, I'm pretty sure the last update was that they were beginning to write this play.
Yeah, so I knew. Okay, let's pull back in here and finish up this short chapter here. So like we said, this chapter basically is kind of a bridge really, into mm-hmm. Davos, into a Dance of Dragons, which is going to set us on a very different path between Melisandre and Davos, where Melisandre is going to be stuck at the wall and Davos is beginning his journey, his search for Rickon Stark.
Yeah, and Davos has had a great character arc, by the way. I mean, beginning of the book, he's washed up upon shore and left for dead and has a kind of an out-of-body religious experience and comes back with a vengeance, swears vengeance on Melisandre, and has really stuck to his guns. Like, he's a brave person in this book and way less subservient. He's talking back. He's kind of telling it how it is. I think that Davos's character arc is slightly undervalued. When people point all the pessimism and stuff, I think that Davos has a lot of forward momentum.
Yeah, it's one of my he's one of my favorite point of view reads. In fact, I've only done a couple, but I have done Davos is one of the people I have done a straight through read, which is a Davos read. But yeah, so I'm actually looking here, because I want to make sure I get it pulled up, because we are going to be doing Boiled Leather, by the way, when we finish the Storm of Swords.
Hell yeah.
Because we're not into Davos until Davos one of A Dance of Dragons. So because actually we're doing this weird read, not weird read, but it's super, super cool read, where it's going to be combining the books in a much more chronological way. Davos is actually going to be chapter 21-ish. We may refrain this, but it's about chapter 21 of our Boiled Leather read. So otherwise, Damn. we wouldn't be talking about Davos again for
years. Years. I mean, geez.
Yeah. So okay. So any. Let me read some comments here. Just from the Song of Ice and Fire reread. So Davos' last words to Edric is, "May the warrior defend you," which is appropriate since Edric had just said he won't pray to R'hllor because he's the warrior's man. But Edric replies with, "May the father judge you justly," which does tie into, by the way, all these gods of the seven who we've been talking about time and time again in each chapter, which is really cool. We've heard that line a few times recently, always in reference to someone who's just died. I'm sure Edric didn't mean it that way, since Davos presents this as something Stannis commanded, but it's sure ominous. Davos is feeling more uneasy in Dragonstone than ever before. The wings of the stone dragons cast great black shadows in the light of the night fire. He tried to tell himself that they were no more than carvings, cold and lifeless. This was their place once, a place of dragons and dragon lords, the seat of House Targaryen. The Targaryens were the blood of old Valyria. I believe the next chapter, opens with him having the dream where Winterfell isn't his place. Oh, by the way, since we're comparing Jon to Davos, the line, "Your grace made me swear to give you honest counsel and swift obedience to defend your realm against your foes, to protect your people," is not Edric Storm one of your people, the one I swore to protect? I keep my oath. How could that be treason? Is similar to Jon's decision to letting the wildlings come through mm-hmm. the wall. And then ultimately, if this does go the route it goes in the show and Jon and Davos becomes like Jon Snow's,
I think that's
hand of likely, the king yeah. or whatever, then yeah. kind of interesting. And George, yeah, he does this so much, this like connecting like this chapter to this, like the chronological read, because everyone does the point of view reads mm-hmm. where you miss out on that. And that's why you have to read these books like 14 different ways to even understand it.
Yep. It's also,
I think that's like a pretty telling sign that Davos will most likely end up John's hand of the king, like we saw in the show.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, John is largely going to fill the void where Stannis has left once he is killed. However that may happen. I think that we've speculated that's probably going to be a bit different than it was in the show. But I think that this is why rereading the books totally is like such a good idea. And is something you miss whenever you just only use the wiki and you're searching and stuff. It's great tools. It's awesome. But I think what you can really start to see more of George's intentions when you follow it chapter by chapter. And we've talked about this with Tyrion and Jaime. And I mean, we've pointed it out multiple times and we're always so thankful that we're doing, a chapter a week, most weeks. I agree. I think there's a huge correlation there. And I actually could see Davos rising pretty high by the end of the story.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, with that, I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 64, John 8, which, by the way, is a very big mega chapter. Huge. Lots going to go down.
Big chapter.
Big. Yeah.
Size matters. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee@podcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.